Today's audio addresses adult issues that may not be suitable for younger ears. Kids, hit the pause button now. Parents, please listen first. Thank you.
Welcome back to Through the Word, 1 Corinthians 7. Today, we're going to be sliding into a new portion of this letter. Apostle Paul becomes Pastor Paul as he addresses a number of questions that the Corinthian church asked him. Since Paul had just finished teaching about sexual immorality, he jumps into questions most on point. Questions about marriage and sex. Verse 1. Now, for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But since sexual immorality is occurring, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife, and each woman with her own husband. Paul had already taught the Corinthian church and written to them before, and so here the church tries to sum up Paul's teaching on sexual immorality, but they go too far. It is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. The church thought that complete abstinence would be best, but here's some big irony. The same church that accepted sexual immorality so bad that the pagans rejected it also somehow believed that total abstinence was the most holy way of life. Anyway, Paul agrees with the Corinthian summary, but with some reservation. Let's jump ahead to verse 26 because I think this will help us understand the entire chapter better if we read it first. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released. Are you free from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Paul calls for the Christians in Corinth to remain as they are due to the present crisis. There's some disagreement on whether Paul was referring to some specific persecution in Corinth or if this was a more general statement referring to the coming day of judgment. Based on other passages in the Bible, I tend to believe that Paul was speaking of some current crisis happening there in Corinth. In 1 Timothy 4, Paul actually says that forbidding people to get married is actually a demonic doctrine. In 1 Timothy and Titus, Paul commands elders in the church to be married men. And Ephesians and 1 Peter give commands for married couples. So, although overall Paul did think it was better to remain single, there's nothing wrong with being married. In fact, back to the Corinthians' question, Paul says that because of immorality, it might be better to be married, even with the persecution happening. And in that marriage, the husband and wife are supposed to enjoy mutual marital affection. Verse 5 gives us the reason. Do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. I say this as a concession, not as a command. I wish that all of you were as I am, but each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, another has that. Satan will do everything to encourage sex outside of marriage, and everything to discourage it within a marriage. Paul says that abstinence in a marriage can be a good thing for a limited time. It's like fasting from food. A short time's good, but don't go too long, as it can lead to temptation. If it was better to be single, should a believer divorce their spouse so that they can be single? Paul says, absolutely not. Verse 10, to the married I give this command, not I, but the Lord. A wife must not separate from her husband. But if she does, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. And a husband must not divorce his wife. Before we dive any deeper into the issue of divorce, I want to address why Paul talks about the difference between his command and the Lord's command here in this passage. Paul may not have been fully aware of how the inspiration of the Holy Spirit was working in and through him while writing. But Paul already told them that he had authority in the church as an apostle. So when he makes the distinction here, he's referring to the fact that Jesus didn't teach this command, but the fact that he is, that Paul is, still made it authoritative for the church. Now, back to divorce. Paul commands believers to remain married, but if they do separate, they are not free to remarry. There are issues that justify a separation, but there are only two reasons clearly given in the Bible that allow for divorce and remarriage, and that's adultery and abandonment, which Paul will address in a few verses. Verse 12, to the rest I say this, I, not the Lord, if any brother has a wife who is not a believer, and she is willing to live with him, he must not divorce her. And if a woman has a husband who is not a believer, and he is willing to live with her, she must not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband has been sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified through her believing husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy. So, what about a believer married to an unbeliever? Surely then, it would be okay to leave the non-believer, maybe remarry another believer? Wouldn't the unbeliever in some way corrupt or defile the believer? Paul says it actually works the other way. The unbelievers in these marriages are set apart by God. They're sanctified, Paul says here, for a special work of the Holy Spirit. 1 Peter 3 says, "Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, when they see the purity and reverence of your lives." Non-believers married to believers have a chance to see a changed life firsthand in the life of their spouse. Back in 1 Corinthians, Paul also mentions that the children of believers are holy, again, set apart for God. The unbeliever in the household does not defile the children. God's blessings are not confined to the believer only, but extend to the entire household. So, does this mean that they're saved? No, but it does mean that God has placed that set-apart unbeliever in that relationship for a reason. Verse 15, "But if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or the sister is not bound in such circumstances. God has called us to live in peace. How do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will save your wife?" So, what if the non-believer decides that they can't live with the believer? If they leave, Paul says that the believer is not under the bondage of that marriage. But if they remain, the believer has a chance to lead them to Christ. Paul then uses the rest of the chapter to discuss a few additional points on marriage and singlehood. Single people, Paul says, have more time to devote to serving God, while married people also have to consider their spouse when making life decisions. Marriage is a gift, and so is singlehood. We're going to close today with verse 17. "Nevertheless, each person should live as a believer in whatever situation the Lord has assigned to them, just as God has called them. This is the rule I lay down in all the churches." God works in all stations of life. Whether married, single, divorced, remarried, or widowed, the Lord has a calling for you and a work to do in your life. Wherever you find yourself, serve God there. That's it for us today. Go read 1 Corinthians 7 and join us tomorrow for chapter 8 on Through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.